When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome into another edition of the All-NBA Podcast. As always, we're sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Tim, how are you doing this fine Monday?
I'm well, man. I had, you know, St. Patty's Day weekend. You know, I'm big on that one. That's just another reason to drink beer, which I love to do. You know, we know the Irish love St. Patty's Day weekend. So do the Germans. I'm mostly German. So I always get excited for that weekend, man. So I had a good weekend. I had fun, watched a lot of good hoops, a lot of good college basketball. Obviously, had to check out some of those tournaments, watch the selection show, men and women, and plenty of good NBA to talk about yesterday as well. We had an incredible, one of the most amazing finishes, Saul, I've seen to a game ever. And that's not an overstatement.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And that's where we're going to start. But yeah, I agree with you. That's basically what I did all weekend as well, is watch these basketball tournaments. Listen, this is the best part of the year for me, is we're coming to the end of the NBA season and March Madness, both on the men and the women's side. And I've always been a big women's hoops fan, coached women's basketball or high school basketball. So like, love the game, love everything that's going on right now at the moment. But yesterday was one of those unique moments in the NBA, and that's why you watch these games, right? Because you never know what you're going to see for the first time. And Kyrie Irving gets the ball with about 2.8 seconds left, gets the switch on Jokic, takes it to the center of the court, basically about the nail, and throws in a left hand hook shot. It kind of was like in between a hook and a regular shot. I don't, you know, like, listen, man, you know, like, if you've never played basketball, then you probably don't understand how difficult that shot was with your non-dominant hand. Tim, I'm going to say that was probably the most impressive game-winning shot I've ever seen.
Listen, and some people might, you know how people do. They take every statement apart, but I agree. I don't think that's an overstatement, man, because of the degree of difficulty, what was at stake. I think it's a statement win for the Mavericks. If they lose that game in overtime, I don't care that they played them tough and they took it to the wire. It doesn't matter. You got to walk away from that with a win to feel the same way. Otherwise, it's still a gut punch and you're demoralized by that. So that was an important game for them. And I thought Denver brought it. Denver came to play. There was a lot of emotion on a part of Mike Malone. You could tell, like, he looked at this as a big game. Denver had all their guys. Dallas had all their guys. We didn't know if Luka was going to play. You know, he was game time decision. He obviously played incredibly well. And then you get this finish. And Dallas had the game in hand. Denver makes their run. And we've seen over the last few years, Denver makes that run that they made in the fourth quarter to erase that double-digit deficit late. They win those games, Saul. That's what they do, because nobody executes better than the Denver Nuggets. When you have to have a good quality possession, really on both ends, nobody's better than the Denver Nuggets. So for Dallas to walk away with that by getting that on that last play, and they ran some action. It was either Luka or Kyrie. Like, you had an option to read either one. It wasn't definitely going into Kyrie. Luka was sort of covered two different times. So they go to Kyrie off that curl. And so I'll go full disclosure. Because I was tied up doing family stuff during the day, I DVR'd the games yesterday that I needed to watch last night. So I watched them last night. But unfortunately, I already got a sneak, like, message came in from my buddy about Kyrie, right? I'm like, oh God. You know, so I was expecting as I'm watching this game play back, Saul, it's 2.8. They're taking, I know what's going to, he's going to make a shot. I just don't know what it is. Okay. I had no idea. And he, when he rose up and the ball like switched over to his left hand, I mean, literally in the moment, I'm thinking like, well, this can't go in, you know? So he shot it. And I think you had a good summation of it. I'll take it one step further of the description of what it was. It was a combination of a runner, a jump hook, and a jump shot. It was like all three wrapped into one. And he actually also, his left hand, he kind of put a little bit of English on the outside of the ball.
Yes.
And the reason that's important, when you're going to your left like he was, and then you're going to shoot the ball with your left hand, and you got a hand extended out in front of you coming from the right side of your body, well, it's very difficult to not shoot that ball to the left side of the rim, because all of your momentum is going that way and you got one hand on the basketball. So the fact that he actually kind of wrapped it, like he wrapped it back around and put that little bit of English on it, and it goes through soft. And it was like, he knew the whole time, like that, this is the shot that I'm going for right now. Absolutely amazing. I love Luka's reaction. He stayed in disbelief. He basically collapsed. He had gone under the basket at that point, running in for the offensive rebound. He collapsed to the ground, like right in front of the first row of fans. Of course, Kyrie got swarmed. It looked a lot like a team had just clinched their spot in the Final Four. Yeah. That was the reaction that you got from their bench. Just an absolutely incredible play, and reminds us again, Kyrie reminded us, this is one of the most special offensive talent of his generation. There's just no denying it. There's a lot of stuff that comes with Kyrie. We talk about a lot of stuff with Kyrie that doesn't involve basketball sometimes, but you cannot deny this guy's greatness, and you saw it on display. He's one of the most ambidextrous players this league has ever seen, with his finishing ability, and in this case, a 15, 16-footer to end the game with his offhand. I still can't really wrap my head around how difficult that shot was.
Listen, Tim, for my money, skill-wise, offensively skilled-wise, Kyrie Irving to me is the best player I've ever seen. Was in terms of like top to bottom skill, the handle, the shot, the playmaking at a variety of different ways. The late great Kobe Bryant did a narration, a video of Kyrie when he was with the Celtics. And it was kind of like this, it's kind of like this Disney themed kind of thing. But basically the kids are singing, if you got two hands, better use both of them. You're just half a player with one. And that's exactly what Kyrie Irving is. Like there's no way to really defend him. If Kyrie is Kyrie, there's not anybody in the league that can cover him. And that's the crazy thing about Kyrie. When you see that shot, if it was any other player, I'd probably be like, oh, what a fluke. You know what I mean? But it's Kyrie, and we've seen him do things with his left before that a lot of other players can't do with their non-dominant hand. It's just the levels of that shot and getting into that shot to me were just one in a million. It was probably like more like one in a trillion, because I've never seen that shot before from a player in the league like that.
So I was talking with my boy JJ Redick this morning, and we were going over some numbers, and this is a pretty cool one to this point. And this wasn't in this category because of where he shot the ball from, but in the paint, field goal percentage with your offhand, non-dunks, right? Take dunks out of the equation. Field goal percentage offhand inside of 5 feet. Kyrie Irving, Nikola Jokic, Drew Holiday. Three highest field goal percentages in the league. Hmm. So you got Jokic, which we would expect, because he's so big and he's heavy and he gets great position. He's got incredibly soft touch. Holiday, we know he loves to shoot the ball with his left going to the rim. He really does. He's always been able to do that. And then you got this smaller guard, even Kyrie Irving. Like, and I put him in the small guard category. He's in that category. And when you look at it historically, it's as good as it gets in finishing, period. Right hand, left hand, whatever. What this guy does at the rim over bigger guys at his size has been astounding his entire career. Now, this isn't in that category. This is something entirely different. I like the word you used, like fluke, because there wasn't 1 ounce of fluke to this. You're 100% right. This was an intentional shot with purpose. He didn't throw it up there, and he didn't heave it in. And they would have taken that, by the way, too. If he shot it, old George Mikan style, left-handed skyhook, and he banked it in, they would have taken it. They needed the game. But that's not what this was. This was a guy that, and I don't think he expected to have to shoot the ball left-handed when he caught it. He just curled toward the lane, and Jokic happened to be right there on the opposite side of his body.
It was the only shot he had.
That's it. That's the only angle you have. That's the only daylight you have. Can you put this thing in your left hand and get it up there? I would have given just about anybody in the league saw credit for hitting the rim or like getting it online, right? And you're like, wow, oh man, that was a pretty good effort there. No way in a world do you think somebody can actually make that shot. So impressive, man. Like I said, they needed it. Dallas has been a little bit of a roller coaster here. You know, everybody knows I've been big on them since the acquisitions. I'm sticking with it. They played great initially. Then they hit a stretch where they weren't guarding a soul and they lost games. Now they're back. They won 5 out of 6, 3 really quality wins in that stretch. Did lose to OKC, and that's something they're going to have to figure out. But I still am very high on this team. And I'm telling you, man, you get them in a best of 7 series with those two guards, the way they play and the way that they're getting what they're getting production wise from the middle and the center position right now with Gafford and Lively and what those guys are doing. If they make enough threes out of their role players, Dallas is good enough that they can avoid Denver. They're good enough to beat anybody and end up against Denver in a conference final. Because I think all these teams now have questions. The Clippers are in a nosedive. The Suns, we're going to get into. What I watched yesterday, I had to take a shower right after the game. I felt filthy watching the game. It was disgusting. It was grotesque, the lack of effort that I saw out of the Phoenix Suns yesterday. So I can't wait to go full bore on them. We know Denver's in a separate category. Minnesota's missing Karl Anthony Towns. You know, Oklahoma City, probably there's a few questions about them too. They've been incredibly consistent all year. I'll take my chances with Dallas OKC. That's a pick'em series if those two teams had to play with a chance to play Denver in the conference finals, like if that's how it laid out. So I think Dallas right now, so they're getting it together, man. They're rolling, and that's the kind of game that can give you a lot of confidence. They played well defensively, and they made the plays late that they had to make to win the game.
Absolutely. You know, and like Tim said, we are going to get into that here in a second. But first, before we get into that, you know, listen, Tim was talking about, you know, having success on the court. You can have success right now. And the thrill and the excitement of DraftKings. March Mania is here. And DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code ALLNBA. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code ALLNBA. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
St. Paddy's Day is over, thank goodness, which means we're going into spring, and this episode is always brought to you by the Spring Cleaning Champions Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and the drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out that winter bush with Manscaped Lawnmowers 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Folks, I can't make this up. Embrace the season and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our special offer. Go to manscaped.com and use code ALLNBA for 20% off and free shipping. Listen, folks, you could use it in the shower. It's got the nice little hedger now that's like, you know, it gets as close as you could possibly get without getting nicked. And guys, you know how painful that is if you've tried to do that yourself. So get Manscaped and save yourself 20% off and free shipping with code ALLNBA at manscaped.com. That's 20% off of free shipping with the code ALLNBA at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. All right. So, you know, Tim, you mentioned it earlier, the Dallas Mavericks. They're right now in a log jam at the 6, 7, and 8 spot with the Sacramento Kings and the Phoenix Suns. Yesterday, Phoenix took on Milwaukee, and about 30 minutes prior to tip, we found out that Giannis was not going to be playing in that game. And so, to me, immediately, I'm like, this is a great opportunity for Phoenix. You're going to be on the national stage once again. You have an opportunity to kind of make an impression, and you have an opportunity to get a win that's a little bit more reachable than if Giannis was playing. And instead, in the first half, Bobby Portis looked like the next version of Wilt Chamberlain, and was dropping shots everywhere. He finished up with 31, but he had 25 in the first half. The Bucks 18 threes in the first half, which is a franchise record. And to top it all off, Damian Lillard is the first player, and I couldn't believe when I heard this, Tim, the first player in Bucks history to have at least 30 points and 15 assists in the same game, which I thought, wow, Oscar Robertson, even Giannis, you would think would run into a game like that, which was an impressive game by Damian.
It's a lot of dimes, man. There's no doubt about it. And look, you alluded to it. If I'm the Suns and I'm in a precarious situation out west as far as where they're situated for the play-in, and the thing that everybody's wanted to preach with this team is patience, patience, because they just haven't played together very much and they got to find their flow. And look, I've been ascribing to that as well. I've given them every benefit of the doubt there is. The one thing that you cannot give a team the benefit of the doubt on is when they show up and they are completely disinterested in playing basketball, because that's what they were yesterday. And there's no excuse for that. So you got to look at this as an opportunity without Giannis. This is a game that this isn't a game like, hey, maybe we can get this without Giannis. No, this is a game where your three big three are playing and he's not. This is a discussion of there's no way that we lose this game. We have to get this game. This isn't a matter of, hey, let's see what happens. It gives us a better chance. No, man, are you kidding me? You got Durant, Booker, and Beal. They don't have Giannis Antetokounmpo. You shoot 58% as a team from the field and give up 140 points. It's almost impossible to do, Saul, because when you're shooting yourself at a rate like that, and it wasn't even like they coughed it up. 12 turnovers is not – that's an average number. It wasn't like they had 26.
For the Suns, 1,000,000%, yes.
12 turnovers for Phoenix. They shoot 58% from the field. They shoot 42% from the three. 12 turnovers, and you give up 140 points? How can you do that when the Milwaukee Bucks are taking the ball to the net to that extent? And here's how. Complete lack of regard for effort getting back in transition and getting ahead of the basketball. Guys jogging, not aware of where the ball was coming. So the initial surge up the floor, whatever you wanted. That's really had a lot to do with Bobby Portis. He's walking right into wide open shots. Bobby Portis, like you said, to go off to that extent and you never make an adjustment on the guy, to let him gut you for 25 points in that short a period of time. You don't make any sort of adjustment with effort and matching up and make sure you're connected to him. They never did first half. Anybody that got beat off the dribble, you were hung out to dry. You were on an island by yourself. There was nobody coming. If you turn the corner against any defender, you were at the rim if you wanted to be. Or if someone did give a half-hearted effort, it was one swing pass and somebody had a wide open three. They didn't look like they cared. They didn't look like they were connected at all. They didn't look like they were in the fight together. So as a result, you said it was a chance to make an impression. They made one on me, brother. They made one on me. And look, they're what, 6-7 or something in their last 13, or 7-6, one of those two. Okay, so this has been an uneven ride as it is. And we keep waiting for this incredible trio to kick in where they're just unstoppable offensively. It ain't happening. And their defense was so bad yesterday. Their effort alone was so bad. It's going to be very hard for me personally to wash this out of my mind, no matter what I see from the Phoenix Suns over the next month. It's going to be hard for anybody to convince me that this is a team that legitimately could contend or compete in the West. And with that kind of talent, that's a sin.
Yeah. No, Tim, listen, covering this team day to day, yesterday on our post game show, I was done. I'm done with all the excuses. I'm done with the inconsistency. And if you've seen this team all season, you know they're probably as inconsistent a team in the NBA as you could possibly get.
Yeah.
From one game to another, whether they have the same personnel or different personnel, they're all over the place. The rotations are a little weird and funky. Bol Bol will have 31 points or 25 points one night against the Houston Rockets and then get like 4 minutes of burn the next game. It's all over the place, right? And you keep going back to, okay, well, we were told this picture was going to be the big three, and they're going to be this offensive juggernaut. Well, Tim, it's cool that they are an offensive juggernaut. And efficiency-wise and field goal percentage-wise, I agree when you're talking about inside the three-point line. But what's happening right now is, especially if you look at the Boston game and the Milwaukee game, is it is a parade of three-point shots that are not only hitting and connecting, but they are also wide open. There is not a single defender within 5 to 10 feet on most of those opportunities for the opposition, which is just asinine. And I get it. Al Horford is not a huge three-point shooter in terms of like volume, right? But he can hit them. And after he hits two or three, hey, you might want to identify my guy over here because he's connected tonight, right? They don't adjust. He hits six threes, and that basically pulls the game away. Then you fast forward just 4 days later, and they're playing the Bucks. And guess what? Bobby Portis is shooting it like damn Craig Hodges in the All-Star game. And he hits three in a row, and still nobody even remotely close. I just don't understand. If this is supposed to be an offensive juggernaut, and I'm not trying to throw everything at Frank Vogel, but he is the head coach, and the selling point was that he was going to be this defensive guy that's going to be able to get to at least shore up that side of the ball to where they can be effective enough against teams like the Bucks and the Celtics. And they are so far away. They are so far away, Tim.
Like, I don't know. You know, I'm sitting here trying to picture this. You know, I never coached in the NBA, man, but I've coached a lot of basketball. And I don't know exactly what I would be thinking about my team if I sat there and watched that kind of effort that I watched yesterday. And it got to the point, there was just a whole lot of, you know, dropping of heads, shoulders dropping, jogging around. I was just in such a state of disbelief. I finally turned it off. I hung in there for 2.5 quarters and I'd seen enough. I couldn't watch anymore because it was literally like you need a disclaimer at the bottom of the screen. Viewer discretion is advised. Because you don't want any young players picking up those kind of habits, right? So literally, if you got kids in the room and they're young and they're ballers, get them out of the room right now because you can't watch this because they might think that this is how the best players in the world do it because that's how bad it was. And it was just so lackadaisical, man. And it's just so surprising because it's not like if they were – you know what they looked like yesterday, Saul? And I'm not trying to take shot at anybody in particular. I'm just going to throw this one team out there. It looked like the Wizards – kind of finishing out the string, right? Because look, I was on a couple teams like that in the NBA. When you got to this time of the year and you're one of the worst teams in the league, and so you're just playing out the games and it's selfish and it's fractured and guys are getting numbers and that's all. And it, a lot of times coaching staffs are playing different guys to see if they're going to even think about them over the summer. You know, things like that. Like that's what it looked like. It didn't look like a team that thinks they can make noise in the Western Conference playoffs. And that is why here we are with 15 games, well, actually 14 now, 14 games to go. The fact that we're sitting here talking about the Phoenix Suns with regard to how much they care and like the lack of effort. Look, if they were playing hard and they still were struggling offensively, you'd still give them time. Hey, man, they're competing. They just got to find a flow with these three guys because they need more reps together, right? That's not what this is. That's not what I watched yesterday. That was such a bad performance in terms of effort that it just makes me think there's just no way that you could take this team seriously in terms of any sort of threat, no matter what happens. And I'm not going to be a prisoner in a moment, man. So they get on a roll here at the end of the year. This is the game that's going to pop up in my head. They're going to have to change my mind once they get into a playoff round with somebody and let me see now, you know, how they come out. And they're digging in and getting into people. Because what I watched yesterday was not a team that has anywhere close to the mental toughness that you need to have to dig themselves out where they are right now and make a run through the teams you're going to have to in the West. No way.
No, I wholeheartedly agree. And to that point, 6, 7, and 8 right now, the Kings are at the 6th spot, the Mavs are at the 7th spot, and the Suns are at the 8th spot. And they're all tied 8.5 games behind the leaders in the West. But, you know, Tim, and when I look at these teams and how they've been playing, to me, I think the Mavs probably have the best opportunity to move to advance and get to that sixth spot. I'm not as big a believer in the Kings, and the Suns are so inconsistent right now. I don't know. Listen, the Suns could easily finish in sixth, and they got four games here upcoming that they should win. You would think that they should win. Listen, you got the Hawks without Trae Young. You got the Sixers without Joel Embiid, and then you got back-to-backs against the Spurs, who, by the way, took the first two from you in a back-to-back earlier this season at home. So you kind of owe a little bit of payback, and you better not take them lightly because they already beat you twice. So I think they have an opportunity to reel off four in a row, and if they do that, maybe that can you know, kind of reinforce the vibes and get back on the same page and stuff like that. And we've seen other teams recover before, but right now, if you held a gun to my head and said you have to pick one of these teams, I'm probably going with Dallas because they seem like they're the closest to the consistency and the highest level of play that can compete with the best in the West than either of the other two right now in terms of connectivity.
Well, listen, you're 100% right. If you want to, you know, you got these three teams, and if you're trying to figure out a tiebreaker in your mind, there's two that stand out to me. One, I'm just going to read you. This is what Dallas has coming up for schedule. I don't know where this ranks in the league. This has to be one of the easiest schedules remaining the way, without question. They play one contending team the rest of the season. Yeah. And that is, Oklahoma City, last game of the year. That's it. And who knows if they're even playing for anything. That might be a rested game. But they got San Antonio, Utah twice, Sacramento twice, Houston, Golden State, Atlanta, Golden State, Houston, Charlotte, Miami, Detroit. I mean, you're not getting Boston. You're not getting Denver. Right, you're not getting the Bucks. You're not getting those teams. So Dallas, for me, they've won 5 out of 6. Now 6 out of the next 7 are on the road. So this is actually going to be, if they can go 5-2, you know, something like that on this stretch coming up with 7 road games. They finish with a bunch of home games, and I think Dallas is going to, I think, separate themselves from these two teams. But here's the main tiebreaker in my mind between those three teams, Saul. They've got the best player.
Yeah.
They've got the best player. And that dude has shown, Luka Doncic has shown, I don't care how big the stage is. I don't care how bright the lights are. He's already proven that with some of the stuff that he's done in the postseason, where he has put teams on his back and beaten them damn near by himself. So I agree with you. I think Dallas, to me, is the, of those three teams you just mentioned, Dallas to me is clearly the biggest threat.
Yeah. Listen, by a mile in the Eastern Conference, Tim, you know, I mentioned the Celtics a little bit ago. You know, they handled the Suns earlier on Thursday without Porzingis, who's still battling a hamstring injury. It is hard for me to look at the Boston Celtics and think that they are not the clear front running favorites right now. Just based on how they can play and the variety of ways they can beat you, especially when Kristaps comes back. But I know, Tim, you think that there's only one other team out there. If it wasn't for them, the Celtics would be the clear front runner.
Well, and listen, if you just based it on what you've watched this year, right, the quality of play, like grading these teams out on a grade of 1 to 100 every night, 100 being like they can't play any better, right? If you graded them out every night, the Boston Celtics have the highest grade in the league. The consistency of greatness that they've displayed this year, it's at the highest level. So to me, seems like we should be ready for a coronation, right? Like who's going to beat this team? If it weren't for the Denver Nuggets' existence, the fact that Denver is out there, that's the only reason we're all not ready to go. Forget it. It's just Boston's year. It's going to, and look, it still might be. I'm not saying they can't beat Denver. What I'm saying is if Denver was just another team in the West and it wasn't the Denver Nuggets with that particular player, and they're, by the way, at Boston and Denver, 2 best records since the All-Star break, that there's a reason for that. They're honing in, right? They're tightening things up, man. The seriousness of the moment is there for them. They understand the stride they need to hit when they get to April 15th so that they're ready to roll. They've been great since the All-Star break. So the fact that Denver's still out there, Saul, that's the only reason we're not all saying, forget it. It's Boston's year. Nothing's going to stop that team this year. And you know what? It might play out that way. But as long as Denver's around, it can't be, you can't say that, you know, this is almost a foregone conclusion for Boston, because it's not.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, the thing about the Celtics that I've kind of learned over the last, you know, couple weeks, really, and really focusing and watching them, is that I was surprised about their bench activity. And it, they don't get a lot of points from their bench, but they get a lot of activity, is what I would say. You know, you get a guy like Peyton Pritchard, who's not going to score 10 or 15 points off the bench, but he's going to be a nuisance out there, right? He's going to cause a little bit of havoc and really get guys to slow down a little bit, put a beat back into their step, and cause hesitation. I saw that so many times at a variety of different levels. Obviously, they get contributions from guys like Derek White and, you know, Al Horford and things like that. But I just feel like this team is different than the team that we saw 2 years ago against the Warriors in the final. I feel like they have matured enough to the point, especially Tatum and Brown, where they understand that the moment's not going to be bigger than them. And I think they learned a lesson last year that they can't just coast into the playoffs and think that they're just going to beat anybody anytime they want. That's why I'm veering towards picking them as the title front runners, because I do think that Denver can give them a run for sure, but they're just too deep for me. I think that they're not going to get bothered if they have to go 7, 8, 9 guys on the bench, as opposed to Denver, who they're going to have like a 6, 7, possibly 8 man rotation, but you know how it shrinks up in the playoffs.
The best argument I will make for Boston winning the whole thing is what I've been seeing out of Jaylen Brown. I think Jaylen Brown's playing the best basketball of his career right now. And the reason that's important, Saul, if I just started spitting out team names, there's 30 teams in this league, and I just said a team name one after another immediately, and I said, who's their best player? You're immediately going to have a name. And it's probably the same exact name I'm going to have, right? Because we just know who that guy is on every roster. There may be a couple where you go, it's a little bit debatable, right? If I said Boston, you're going to say Jason Tatum. And that's where we kind of are with them, right? Because we're all waiting on, like, okay, listen, man, the guy's been incredible now for a number of years. He's been an MVP candidate player for several years. He did not play well in that series against Golden State. So that's always kind of there. And you're always wondering, you know, how is Jason Tatum going to respond to that if he gets back to that stage? What I'm saying to you is it's not as important as it was because of what Jaylen Brown is doing right now. Jaylen Brown's making better decisions. He's got great balance in his game with mid-range, post, threes, and transition. He's doing all four platforms as a scorer. Since the break, 26 points a game, 54% from the field, 41% from the three, and here's a big one, almost a 3-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio. And he's never going to be a high volume assist guy. Like, you don't see Jaylen Brown every night getting 6, 8, 10 assists. Like, that's not his thing. Nobody on their team really does. They kind of spread it all around with the assists. But he's always been a guy that, like, he would have 3 assists, 4 turnovers. 4 assists, 3 turnovers. Like, that's not the case anymore. He's having cleaner sheets. He's not coughing it up, which means his counters to good defense have been better. He's not taking it in tight spots in traffic and losing the ball by getting himself all knotted up because he took it in one dribble too deep. These are the kind of things he used to do. I think a prime for a player is 25 to 31. He's 27 years old. He is firmly right in coming into that absolute wheelhouse when you're at your best. Most mature. You've got money already. You've got some accolades. You're winning games. You've been, you know, so you just are more comfortable in your own skin. And that's where he looks right now. And that's a big, big thing for Jason Tatum. I think Jaylen Brown has led them in scoring 6 of the 12 games since the All-Star break. Tatum 5, and I think Derek White 1, something like that. That's great. That's what I want to see out of Boston. More nights like that where, hey, Tatum struggled. By the way, Tatum, remember the Denver game recently? Tatum, 5 for 14, missed a corner three that could have tied the game up late, wide open three. So they didn't lose that game. Second time he lost to Denver. Saw in that game, Jaylen Brown had 41 points and 14 rebounds. The dude came to play on a big, big stage and a game they really desperately wanted to have. I am much more comfortable now, I think, with Tatum in pressure situations because I think he's going to have more help than he's ever had. And I think that's important for him.
That's a fantastic point. Fantastic point. We do have a couple super chats we want to get to. Psycho Blue with a $9.99 super chat said, this one's on me. I made a name bet that the Suns would finish better than the Mavs. If I held off, the Suns would be 50 wins deep right now. My bad. Love from the 804. And then he had one more super chat as well. Also a $9.99. And it was... Oh, I'm sorry. That was one. Frank had one for $10. I don't think it's fair or kind of blaming Vogel for the Suns' poor defense when they lacked the personnel. Back with the Lakers, they had the personnel and were a top five defense. I mean, listen, that's a valid point. A valid point for sure. But listen, you can't, the team can't be so bad on defense that we just ignore it. Like, well, he doesn't have the people, so they can just be the worst defense in the league. No, they're not the worst defense in the league. They're a top 15 defense still, or they're right there around that 15 mark. But they could be much better based off of effort alone. And really, listen, the connectivity that has just not been there. So speaking as a guy that's watched every single game the Suns have had, I just believe that they can do much, much better. They shouldn't give up 140 points in an NBA game. They do have the talent to limit that. So before we go, March Madness. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just real quick on that point, because we talked about Vogel. And look, man, I like Frank Vogel a lot, but there are certain things specifically related to like how you judge a coach. One of them is defensive effort and preparation. I'm sorry, that is. And you can't just say, oh, the players, they don't have the guys to do it. Well, then you got to tighten that up with scheme, matchup, rotations, adjustments to something that's hurting you. That's that's your coach. Now, you're right. They don't have Anthony Davis back there patrolling the rim. I get that. And like, he makes up for a lot of mistakes as your last line of defense. I understand all that. You're right. There's more there than what we're seeing. I'm sorry, there is. Yeah. And they've got to figure it out. And they don't have a lot of time, man. 14 games. I can't imagine how they feel right now leaving Milwaukee, getting on the charter. And I just can't imagine what that mood was like on that airplane. That felt like the end of their season. Like, that's what that felt like, that game. That's how bad that was. I don't know how your morale can be as low as it probably is right now with 14 games to go and you're trying to go make this run. I don't get it. I don't know. Although I will say this, throw that film on there, Frank. Throw that film on there, coach, in the film room. Put that up there, because guess what? That don't lie. And when you see the lack of regard for transition defense, the lack of regard for help on dribble penetration, the nobody giving multiple efforts to chase three-point shooters off the line, none of that stuff. That was the least physical defensive game I saw a team play this year. And they're allowing more physicality. We know that. The league wants you to be more physical defensively to get them these crazy numbers down. They look like, you know, a team that certainly didn't get that memo, but just didn't care. And that's where I have a big problem with this team. Not that they lost. It's the way they lost.
Yeah. No. Amen, brother.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Libsyn Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Libsyn Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Libsyn Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
March Madness is here, Tim, and you know, obviously the brackets came out yesterday. You and I, big men's and women's hoops fans, but you know, I wanted to get your perspective on, you know, your experience playing in the tournament at LaSalle. You know, obviously you guys were a 13 seed, I believe. Yep. But you know, what was that journey like? What did it feel like to get your name announced, and just the jubilation, and then the refocusing, having to go into the tournament?
Yeah, you know, so I'll give you, just setting that up. I went to LaSalle going in my freshman year. They were preseason top 20 in the country. We had a few guys that played professional basketball on that team. I was a freshman coming in. We lost our center right before the season, so we ended up not even coming close to meeting those expectations. Second year, similar, kind of a 500 type of run. Junior year, we go to the NIT championship game. And we thought we had a shot at getting an at-large bid. We didn't get one. We accept the NIT bid. We win five games. You know, we're in Madison Square Garden playing in the finals. We lose by 4 points to Southern Mississippi. But it set the stage. So, like, that little playoff run, even though it was the NIT, getting a taste of that and how into it, like, our school got and the alumni and everything and playing in the Garden, like, it gave us a lot of juice going into the next year. And we had three NBA players on the team, myself, Lionel Simmons, and Doug Overton. So we had three pro players on a small school in the Metro Atlantic Conference. So we go into my senior year, we run the table, 17-0, 14-0 in the regular season, win our first two conference games. I've never been as nervous in my life as I was going into that championship game, the conference, because we were 16-0. And you're like, you can't, because here's the thing, that league was not getting an at-large bid. You had to win the tournament, close the deal. So I've never been as nervous, and we played terrible in the first half. We finally claw a fight. We end up getting the win, cut the nets down at the Meadowlands. Great feeling. So we know we're in. So you're sitting there on Selection Sunday, but what you don't know is who you're going to play, where you're going to be seated, where are you going to have to go play. That was a pretty awesome experience, man, sitting there as a team waiting to see your name pop up on the screen. I saw a lot of that reaction yesterday. It always brings me back to that moment in my life, because you dreamt about it as a little kid. You want to play in the NCAA tournament. That was my last shot to do it. And we got in, and then we played Kansas State. And we went out and played them at South Bend. So we played them at Notre Dame. They had Mitch Richmond, you know, Hall of Famer, on their team. A great team. And we went out there. We didn't play our best game, but it was very, very close game. I think they might have got us by 8 or 10. Kind of ran away a little bit late. But we gave them all they could handle. We ended up losing. And then they went on to the Elite Eight, lost to Danny Manning's Kansas team, who ended up winning the national championship. So, but I just – it is a cool time of year, because I'm so grateful that I got to experience at least one NCAA tournament game. And knowing, you know, what that was like. And we hadn't been there in a while as a school. And it's kind of started a renaissance. I think they went to the tournament, LaSalle, like 5 of the next 6 years. They went to the NCAA tournament. And then it's been dry ever since. It's been dry. It's been a little bit of a dry spell at LaSalle. But we did have that period of time when we were kind of on the map, and getting to the tournament was a regular thing.
Yeah, like I said, it's just the best time of the year. And this year it's a little bit – unique as well, because one of the premier players in the country on the women's side, Caitlin Clark, you know, obviously all the eyes have been on that program all season long. She's broken all types of records. South Carolina still undefeated. They get a buzzer beater just to get to the SEC final to play LSU. And just listen, I don't know if, you know, the women's game has ever been so magnetizing before. You know what I mean? Like I every time Caitlin Clark's on TV, I want to watch. Every time South Carolina's on TV, I want to watch. LSU, same thing. Like, and there's so much good basketball around the country. And I hear, hell, on the West Coast over here, we had 8 teams from the Pac-12 alone get into the NCAA tournament. And so it's just good basketball. And so I'm very interested, because you have a team in Fairfield That is 31-1. And you have a relationship with that program as well.
I do. So Carly Tebow's the head coach. Her father, Mike, coached me in Omaha, Nebraska in the CBA. When I got out of college, I didn't go right to the league. I was in the CBA out in Omaha. Mike Tebow was my head coach. Mike Tebow then coached in the CBA for a while, became the head coach of the Connecticut Sun, and then he was the head coach of the Washington Mystics forever, won a WNBA title there a few years ago. And now he's in the front office, and his son, Eric, is the head coach of the Mystics, and their daughter, Carly, is the head coach of Fairfield. She spent time as an assistant at Southern Miss. They won a national championship. She spent time at Minnesota with Lindsey Whalen. She finally took her first head job at Fairfield 2 years ago, and they just had the best team in program history, 31-1, 28 straight wins they have going into the NCAA tournament. But it's just funny because I've been texting with her and her family because I became family to them during that time when Mike was coaching me. Carly was like 2 years old, 3 years old. I was over her house playing Barbies and stuff. We're down in the basement, like, you know, playing full court Nerf hoop games with her and her brother. And now he's the head coach of the Washington Mystics, and she's the head coach of Fairfield 1-1 team going into the tournament. It's just a really, really cool thing. And I saw all the pictures of the whole family celebrating, you know, after they cut the nets down and taking pictures on the court with everybody there. And it was a really cool moment because they're just great people, and it's a big part of my life. Mike was a big part of my development as a pro player in helping me get to the league. And now I get to sit back and watch them and root hard for them. I think they got Indiana in the first round, and they're coming from the Metro Atlantic Conference. So this is going to be a step up, certainly level of competition, but they're incredibly well coached.
Hey, you know, you listen, the women's game is the first game to ever have a 16-1 upset. So if there's a good opportunity to pull that one off, I know it's not 16-1, but you know, obviously it's a very high ranking team in Indiana. So good luck to them. Tim, thanks for sharing that. Thank you all for joining us on another episode of the All NBA podcast. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and hit that like button as well. Give us a thumbs up on your way out. We appreciate y'all. Until next time. Peace. The mayor.